Michael J. Rea knows set design. He is a professor at the University of Arkansas and is the director of design program and vice chair of scenic design. Recently, he asked 12 of what he calls the A-list designers on Broadway to talk to him about their work. He says he thought maybe he'd get a couple of them. 10 said yes. The other two only declined because of scheduling conflicts. The result of those conversations is his new book, Starting Your Career as a Theatrical Designer. As the title suggests, it is must-reading for the reader, very much interested in the work. But for the non-designer, it's an interesting read as well, offering insight into the hard work and theatrical magic that frames many of the industry's most popular dramas and musicals. The Tony Award winners and nominees Michael spoke to represent nearly half of the current productions on Broadway.
I was so pleased with the response I got from all of these designers. I had a perception, probably ill-structured in my mind, of what they would want to offer as far as their work or an insight into their lives, and I couldn't have been more wrong. When I put together my A list of designers, I also made what I called my B list, and I will not mention those names, but I thought I may get one or two from my A list Broadway working people, so I better have a backup. And what I found is out of those, the 10 that you see in the book, I tried 12. I tried to get 12 people in this book. Only two were unavailable. One was unavailable. I couldn't get a hold of the person in order to make it happen. And the other was in Europe. And she would have been in the book, but we could never make our times work. But all of them agreed to be in it.
And you said the interviews were 2 to 3 hours. And
yes.
These are people who are, many of them working on multiple projects at that time.
Absolutely.
So to get 2 to 3 hours with them had to be...
It was amazing. I did get between 2 and 3 hours with almost everyone. Scott Pask, for example, was actually in tech for Book of Mormon, and I was supposed to meet him at the theater for our interview because he felt that would be the easiest way to meet him. I then got a message the day of the interview saying the producers don't want anybody new in the space. I'll meet you at my apartment. So I met him in his private apartment. And he was gracious and gave me the time still. But that show at that time was really still a kind of a secret as to what it was going to look like and feel like. So he said he didn't mean to be rude, but he gave me his time anyway and gave me some great insight about that particular piece as well. And you know, that happened with many of the other people in the book. Ken Posner was in tech final previews for Catch Me If You Can, which is going
to
be featured.
Yeah.
So I got to sit in on a final performance during previews while he was still getting notes on that production, which was exciting for me.
The woman you talked to, her name escapes me now, who helped design Avenue Q, who designed Avenue
Anna Louises.
Right. And there are pictures in the book of the set. And the set that you show from her very much looks like the set that then came to Walton Arts Center years later. So do most of these set designs travel?
Yeah, that's that's part of the informational part of this book that I find really great for young people and for myself, is that once you design that show, whether on Broadway or off Broadway, you own that design, and the hopes of it going on to a regional theater or a national tour or something like that. That's where the designers actually can make some money, is that they own that sort of proprietary right of their image. And so when the show comes to the Walton Arts Center as a national tour or as a bus and truck, it is still their design, and they will still receive basically royalties for their work.
Actors from movies get residuals, set designers. It only seems fair.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really how they keep a living, is having as many shows on the road. It's not the money you make to design these shows, I learned. You don't make a great deal of money on the actual design. Where you make the money is the hopes that it has a life beyond its life in New York City.
She happens to be the person who grew up helping her father, watching her father and helping her father rebuild Volkswagen engines.
Yes.
And she said that kind of helped her because she learned how to make things work. And that's so important with set design.
She's fascinating, a woman to speak with. She gave me so much insight as to how she keeps this industry moving forward for young people, because she brings in lots of interns. She hires young people from Arizona and New York and Alabama. It doesn't matter. As long as you have a passion and you have some skill set that she can utilize in her office, she'll bring in as many as she can afford to keep employed. And that's really a goal of hers, is to keep that going. And it's problem solving. Everybody has a role in her studio to problem solve one component of the production.
That comes through because you've got people in here profiled who have now won Tonys, been nominated for Tonys, who come from Yuma, Arizona, or rural California, or North Carolina. You don't have to be of this pedigree to then make it in New York in this field.
That, too, was a huge part of what I was interested in exploring. My intention was to show you can go to school in Dallas, Fayetteville, Arkansas, anywhere, and as long as you get your body to New York City somehow and you find a way to make a living working at the Gap or wherever you want to work during the day, but you find your way into a studio, there's work to be had, and your skill set is going to be utilized. You don't have to be an NYU grad or a Yale grad. And there was a perception for many, many years that those are the people who make it on Broadway. Now, having said that, some of these did go to NYU and Yale, but others did not. Some didn't even finish college.
Set design is easy to see. Often the curtain will go up and you go, wow, that's amazing. I think of High Fidelity. You've got pictures here. And you see that High Fidelity set and you go, wow, that's amazing. It's colorful. It's engaging. So the set, you see and you understand. Lighting, while is very important, you may not always understand that you're being influenced by lighting.
Right. Kevin Adams makes a remark. Kevin is one of the lighting designers featured in the book, and I asked him that same question. I said, do you read all the reviews of your work? And he said, you know, people still don't even really write reviews about lighting. There's this old, you know, understanding that lighting is meant to be there but not be noticed, and he is not a proponent of that. His lighting is a little bit more out there and in your face in some designs, and so he still, you know, appreciates a good review of his work. But you're right, lighting is sometimes transparent to the audience, and that too can be a good thing, but also it's how we create focus in the theater. When you have a film, they can do camera shots to create focus. We can't do that. We have to do it with isolation or color shift or texture or pattern. And timing of cues also helps us as audience members understand that. And that's why these people are such masters of their craft.
You've already mentioned there were some surprises when you were putting this book together. There was a big one that kind of came out, a surprise in your life that was a result of working on this.
Yeah, it... It still feels kind of like a dream that it actually happened and is over and there's still a life beyond it. While I was interviewing Christine Jones in her studio, we had about a 3.5-hour conversation. And then when the interview wrapped up, we were just chatting. Both being in education, we had another connection that bonded us in a different way. And at the end of the interview, I just said, you know, if you ever need a designer as an assistant, I'm in the union. I'd be happy to come here and work with you. And she said, okay, and it, being very kind. And however many weeks later, while we were doing edits of her chapter, she called and said, can you free your schedule in October for the whole month? And I said, I'm teaching. I have graduate students. I have undergraduate students. Let me ask my dean. And our dean graciously said, you have to do this. We will find a way to support you. This is exactly what we should be doing. And she did. And I was in New York for a month in the theater with Harry Connick Jr. and the entire cast. And
he was On a Clear Day You Can See Forever.
Exactly. Yeah. It was actually a dream.
So what did you do? I mean, what does one do then in that space?
Well, my role as the associate designer, and it was sort of a temporary associate, her real associate designer, Ed Coco, was getting married during the load-in. So he said to her, I can't do this. And she said, I need someone who can be my associate. And what that basically means is I'm in the theater from the minute the show moved over to the space at the St. James to help unload the set into the space, make sure it was positioned properly according to the plans. I also updated all of the ground plans and elevations when changes were made to the set. I would get on my computer and make changes so that everything that all the information we had was clear and new and current. That information then went to the stage manager. So they knew exactly where set pieces were at certain scenes of the show. I did that throughout the 4 weeks I was there for tech and for the first day of dress, the first preview night.
Was it at all? Did it make you at all nervous? Because here in your role as an educator, you're kind of the final say. You're the one who says that works, that doesn't, that's good, that's not. There, it's a much different dynamic. Was that at all intimidating?
It was very intimidating. But what I have to say is the gentlemen that built the scenery and ladies from Hudson Scenic, they are pretty much in charge of how this moves into the space. They were so gracious and welcoming and warm. And I was, again, absolutely blindsided by the generosity that they gave me and the respect that they gave me. I came in and I knew the plans and I knew the design because I had studied it before I went to New York. But still, I let them know, I know I'm the outsider. This is your baby. I will do what you need me to do. But they deferred to me on a number of occasions. And Christine did as well and said, look, I can't be there. I'm in another meeting for Rigoletto and you're going to have to cover. So I would make very minor decisions. But
still, this is a multi-million-dollar Broadway opening.
Yeah. And I'm deciding, you know, or helping to decide where the furniture is going to be placed and how we're going to alter a scenic unit to make it fit. Because when it fit in the studio at rehearsal, it was just fine. But in the actual theater, it was hitting another piece of scenery. So we had to do edits and send it back to the shop to be cut. And I had to make some choices there and also keep the actor happy and safe on the piece. So, yeah, they weren't major decisions, but they were ones where I felt that I had a responsibility to the production and to the budget and everything else. And to Christine to keep her vision true to what she wanted.
I have to imagine that the conversations and that experience with On a Clear Day You Can See Forever has to help you now when you come back and work with students here.
It's amazing because I had never worked on Broadway, obviously. And having that experience, even though it's only one production, what was so beautiful to me was that everything we do at the university here is exactly what they do there, just on a higher scale. Now, they concern themselves with, is that the right prop? Would that actor actually drink that drink? Yeah, they talk about those things as well. It was never in the context of what can we do to make this glitzier or worth that $145 ticket. It was always based on what's the story we're trying to tell? How can we reinforce that story visually with this costume choice or this set piece? Is it doing what we want it to do? And we do the same with our students here. Are you telling the story with your scenic choices? Are you helping move that story along? Or is it just extraneous and not necessary? If it's not necessary, get rid of it.
The name of the book is Starting Your Career as a Theatrical Designer, Michael J. Rea, and it is available online. It's available is it at Nightbird?
It should be soon.
Okay.
It should be soon at the university bookstore and at Nightbird. It is available at Amazon and those types of places, but yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Michael J. Rea has much more to discuss about the book, and you can hear more from our conversation in an audio extra at our website, OzarksAtLarge.com.